Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up? This is
a good
recording, man.
Yeah,
hey,
brother,
like,
solid. Right on.
You look like you've done that before. All right. Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. Welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning, G. Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing okay. You know, the Bucks let us down for the last time this season.
Let you down.
You know, Tuesday night, they looked so good. The bench played great. And yesterday, it just looked like a different team. They didn't look in it.
Well, they looked tired.
Yes.
Yeah, they were tired. They looked like they felt like me.
Sandy, they were tired.
Of course they were. And, you know, that's part of that is, you know, without a deep bench, these guys played 40-plus minutes for several games in a row, and Middleton hadn't played in many games for a long time. And, you know, they're missing a couple of major engines, and they hadn't gone deep in the bench during the season, so it was hard to do it during the playoffs. I mean, it was the perfect storm as far as the Bucks are concerned, but it definitely suggests to me, you know, you look at that team and you don't say, okay, next year they can stand pat and win the championship. They can't do
that. So if you don't know by now, that's my co-host, it's Friday, Sandy Williams, and, you know, we've got a great show lined up for you this morning. But while we're on that topic of the Bucks, Calvin was disappointed, and, you know, Sandy hit the nail on the head. They were exhausted. And they had nothing left in the tank.
Yeah.
And as you stated, Indiana, you saw they were subbing in and out, youthful legs, and the Bucks just, they gave it all they had. By halftime, or in the third quarter, the bench had 1 point.
You know,
The bench had one point.
You know, and the NBA particularly played the way Indiana plays, a little bit like hockey. You know, you have to count the minutes for people, and you keep fresh legs in there, and you keep the pressure on, and if the other side can't match you for depth in the bench, you're going to exhaust them. And particularly if they're a team that can't rely on the three-point shot, and we're not a team that can rely on it. Even though we are one of the leading three-point shooting teams, we're not a team, you know, we don't have Stephen Curry. We don't have someone who can always make them.
Well, you know.
And incidentally, Stephen Curry isn't, they aren't in the playoffs either.
You know, well, he's 36 years old now.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, at one point in time, Indiana's bench had outscored the Bucks 50-1 in the game on yesterday. And then in the end, the Indiana's two leading scorers were bench players.
Yeah.
And so it's clear to see, you know, where one of the major issues, and let's not kid ourselves, Giannis wasn't there. It wasn't there a whole series. And they played representatively
they got six games into it
without Giannis.
Yeah, they lost one game in overtime, right? They could have won that game. If they win that game, it's a totally different series.
Plus two games without Giannis and Dame.
Yeah.
Two or three games without Giannis. So, you know, they gave it the old college try. And, you know, we'll close the book on them for another season, and we'll see what they can do to improve the team, short of, and I'm not going to say it on air, short of that.
Except when you mouth the word Antetokounmpo, it's pretty easy to see what you're saying.
I don't know what they're going to be able to do. They've got their top four or five players locked into contracts going into next year, already signed. So, you know, but anyway. You know, we've got a conversation that Sandy and I are going to be having that we trust in that you'll join in. It is, and we're going to have an in-depth conversation about what's going on with the protests on college campuses. And we certainly, no matter what side of the equation you are on, we want you to join in, because we're at that point with these demonstrations, Sandy, and right now, all over this country in many universities, as well as some students, high school students, are now starting to kind of get involved in some of these protests.
I called you yesterday. I wanted to do this because this is like deja vu for me. And this will demonstrate how old I am, but I was a second-year law student at Columbia in 1968 when the students at Columbia took over the campus. It was like, you know, they took over Hamilton Hall just like they did this last several days ago at Columbia. We were, at the time, protesting Vietnam and the situation in Vietnam. And it was one of the first campus protests. And it was a spring period. These things always happen in the spring when students are restless and want to be outside. And it's easy to gather crowds. But that shut down the university, shut down my graduate year. We went to pass-fail, and school was shut down. I was a sympathizer, but not necessarily a participant in the protest. I was there the night the police came in. There was several weeks of students basically baiting the police. This was in the days of pigs and pukes, and the cops were calling the kids pukes, and the kids were calling the cops pigs, and they were at each other verbally for quite a while. And when it finally came the time to clear out, the police came in, and it was damn near a police riot. But the problem there was that the students took over a building. The protest was going along just as protests do, and as the protests had during the 60s, involving civil rights, peaceful, until the students took over the Hamilton Hall, the dean's office, and committed crimes, essentially. And at that point, it put the university in the position of having to do something and gave the police license to do something about it. And the whole thing was ugly. If it hadn't gone that direction, I think the protest could have been effective. What happened was the protest became a calling card for conservatives, and conservatives began to point at protests like the Columbia protest to point out the fact that this is what the left is all about, okay? And it really set the stage, and the campus uprising kind of set the stage for the law and order run by Nixon to win the White House.
Well, you know, in 1968, I was a young boy, and 68 was a watershed year with protests all over the country. Central cities burned.
Well, Martin Luther King was killed. Bobby Kennedy was killed that year. I mean, the year became one of damn near anarchy, and protest was called for because the world was going strange directions all at once.
So I recall the tanks and the National Guard, and the armed National Guardsmen
in Milwaukee.
Oh, absolutely! I Third Street, Dr. King Drive, was where a lot of unrest happened, and so I lived on fourth, two blocks from there. And as buildings burned, the National Guard were there with their drawn weapons. Never will forget it. I was 14 years old.
Yeah.
So I you know, those protests and the times of those protests kind of shaped the nation, and protests at times do shape the nation. Let me do this. Let me bring Mike in from West Bend. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. We're going to have this conversation however long it takes. We're going to drill down on both sides. Sandy and I are going to have a...
Just before we bring Mike on, I just wanted to say that I think the problem with the current situation, I had two things I wanted to make sure we talked about. One, I think that Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi really understood the process of protest and understood that it was absolutely important that protests be civil and obedient, essentially, not disobedient only civilly, but not breaking the law and not creating violence and not creating grounds for police conduct, essentially. And so my concern about what the discussion about the campus upset now is that it's being painted black and white. And to the extent that the left feels compelled to protect the students 100%, I think they make a mistake, because there are problems with some of what the students are doing. If there are students who are in fact using hate speech and anti-Semitism, overt anti-Semitism, or threatening those who might be Jewish, that needs to be condemned. And I think it is being condemned, but not maybe loudly enough. I think Joe Biden is now affirmatively talking about this strenuously, because he's got the right perspective on this. Yes, we can protest, but we can't do it unlawfully. We must do it civilly.
Well, so my perspective of it, Sandy, is there are not just students on the campus. There are people who have come from outside who are, they can't control who's going to come to protest. People show up. There are people who have their own reasons and rationales for why they are involved in protests, and they come in and they take the thing in a completely different direction. So what gets me about that part of this discussion is the very people on the right who said that the protest that they had at the Capitol was a peaceful protest, except for there were outside agitators who came in and created that environment. Well, you can't on the one hand say that and then expect that to be acceptable when with what happened on January 6th, and then dismiss that as a possibility for what's happening on the college campuses. I've read where they've arrested many people who are on these college campuses who don't go to the university. And those people, just like in when Sherman Park, after where I live, when George Floyd, and there was a riot, they found out there were people who had come here from other parts of the country who kind of helped pour the fuel on that, and they arrested people weren't the people from the community.
Yeah, and those agitators might have had agitation in mind for its own purpose,
right,
which was to discredit the protest. We'll talk about it.
Right, all right. 844-967-2789. Your thoughts? Sandy and I are going to have this conversation. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. You don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. No, no, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
All right. Welcome back to a very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. It's Friday. That means Friday's Sandy Williams, my co-host, and I are going to have a real conversation about the protests. You know, Sandy and I, you know, go back at a time when protests in this country were even much more engaged than these protests. These are mild protests compared to what took place in the late 60s.
I mean, you know, this all the music today will be reflective of that, and the music of the day, much of it related to it, because it was on everyone's mind, and the things that were going on in the world were both up close and personal with respect to the racial issues in the United States, and up close and personal with respect to Vietnam. The war was way over there,
right?
But the draft was right here, and everyone was exposed to it who was in college. All the young men at the time, they weren't drafting women. All the young men who, when they turned 18, we had selective service cards.
They burned him.
And we were all subject to the draft. And when you got drafted in 1968, you knew what was going to happen. You were going to be sent to Vietnam.
Let's do this. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. I'm really interested in you joining the conversation. Let's go to Mike from West Bend. Good morning to you, Mike. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Well, good morning. I'm directing this more to Sandy, and it's kind of on the same lines as the protest. I had a round table with my daughter. She's 35, and several of her friends, 35 to 40. And their question to me was, and I've been a Democrat all my life, Dad, tell me why I should vote for Biden. All these people are entrepreneurs running businesses with employees from anywhere from 25 to 100. And they look at why they don't understand why Biden's going after them. They don't understand why their businesses, more regulations, more taxes are coming on to them. And it seems like my daughters are saying to me, we can't absorb this. Big companies can. Why are they always down on us? And yesterday she's watching the protests and she says, you know, a lot of overprivileged kids, when she saw the art students getting their bills paid by Biden, she shook her head and she says, how are the young people going to build a strong country, Dad, like you guys did, with this type of unfairness? And there's a lot of them, they just don't understand why Biden, they ask you, why does Biden constantly on our backs?
Huh. Well, I guess I'm factually scratching my head because taxes haven't gone up during the Biden years on people like your daughters, if they're entrepreneurs. There hasn't been a rise in taxes yet at all. And if there is a rise in taxes, he's talking about only allowing a rise, an increase in taxes for those with incomes of greater than $400,000, whether it be direct or indirect through an LLC. And as for regulations, if they're in small business, I'd be surprised if the regulations they face are federal. They might be some state regulations. But so I'm just not understanding some of the rhetoric that's ongoing now about how Biden in particular in this 3.5 years, how he might have become a problem for those who are in business. And with respect to what's going on in the campuses, I don't think it can be blamed on Biden at all. I mean, maybe the foreign policies of the United States, which are obviously bipartisan, and to the extent that there's currently a problem, it seems to be whether there's enough aid to Israel or not. And Biden, I think, has been strenuously supporting Israel. He's been trying to maybe jawbone with Israel about what their policies are. But there's been a great deal of benefit flowing to Israel during the Biden years. So I just don't quite understand the rhetoric surrounding Biden and business. And with respect to loan forgiveness, you know, the loan forgiveness that I'm aware of that he just did was for students who were hoodwinked and defrauded by for-profit colleges. And it didn't relate only to art schools. I mean, I think there were some art colleges who were carrying out that kind of fraudulent conduct. But, you know, I have trouble questioning whether students who were defrauded ought to get some relief.
You know, I hate that Mike left because I wanted to ask him, you know, again, where did they get the information? Where did his daughters get the information that that is happening? Because it's not true. It's hard to defend things that aren't true, Sandy. And so people can blame Joe Biden for things that aren't true, things that aren't happening, and they can go to the mountain and shout those things, but they're not true. So Biden can't defend himself. The Democrats can't defend that kind of rhetoric that is factually wrong, but yet those are the kinds of things that people are saying are true. And I don't know how you can get people to to not believe in those things that he just said. There are many people who do believe that.
Well, I think that I think the right has done a job of painting the left as being a and the Democrats as being a party that is that wants to create lots of government regulations. I think if you analyze the regulations that are ongoing and being promulgated, most of them are aimed at protecting
citizens.
Tom, Dick, and Mary.
Yes.
And most of them are not aimed at small businesses, okay? And, you know, to the extent that small businesses have cumbersome issues, some of them might relate to health care, for instance, which they've always had, okay? There's always been an obligation on the part of businesses to provide health care and health insurance to employees if they get big enough.
You know, Sandy, there's a new farm bill that's making its way through right now. I read some of the stuff in the farm bill. Joe Biden is looking out for the small farmer. And yet, I guarantee you, when it comes to the decision on that farm bill, there'll be pushback from people on the right who'll say, see, he's anti-small farmer. But that's not what's in the farm bill. They're going to have to read some of those things to find out for themselves. But anyway, we've gotten off the beaten track. 844-967-2789 is the number. Hang on the phone lines. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams and I, and we're having a discussion about, you know, the protests. 844-967-2789.
Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is...
All right, Sandy, I'd love to play that all the way through.
Yeah, Jimmy Cliff is the guy's name, but you know, I picked that one because it showed how broadly it was affecting music. I mean, that was sort of a calypso kind of a thing, and it got into that as well.
844-967-2789 is the number. Sandy and I are having a conversation about what is transpiring on the university campuses across the nation, and that's the unrest from the students. And we're going to go into even more depth as we move forward. You can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Love to hear your thoughts. Let's go to Gary from Sussex. Good morning to you, Gary. Your thoughts?
Hey, guys. Okay, I've been watching the riots also on TV. Yesterday morning in L.A., I was watching that. Now, I did notice when they started arresting these people and they took the masks off that they were like 40-year-old college students or professors or people that came off the street. Now, in my opinion, if they didn't have the agitators there, it probably would have been more peaceful. But when the kids, whether there's agitators or not, when the kids are ordered to take down their tents and they don't, and they're disrupting other kids from going to school and then putting up signs that we hate the Jews and we hate the USA. And I also saw signs, if you saw them, that they hated Biden. They had his name on there too. When you take down an American flag on an American flag pole and put up a Palestinian flag, I think you've gone a little bit too far. But the thing is this, you know, you guys are talking before, and I agree with everything you're saying this morning, 100%. But, you know, you're talking about, you know, these are outside people, these outside people. You know what? Anybody in the United States has a right to go wherever they want to go and protest. So it's not the fact that these people are so bad that they came from other cities and stuff like that to protest with the students. They're in solidarity, just like in Vietnam. I mean, you know, I'm 72, so I was old enough to be in the draft. I was married 2 years after I was married, and then finally the war was over 2 years after I was married, and I'm thankful for that. And I got married early because I was hoping not to go to Vietnam, you know. So
I'm sure there were other reasons.
Well, I was in love.
Yeah, there you go. So
I was in love, and you know what? I'm still married to the same girl 51 years later.
There you go. Congratulations. Well, you know, Gary, I don't think we do disagree that much. I think my view is that first of all, I'm not sure that rioting is the right term to use for most of what's going on here. And I'm afraid that we're very quick to go from protest to riot in terms of the language we use, because what was going on in campuses that I saw wasn't rioting. Okay. It was sit-ins. It was encampments. But to the extent that, as I said, that laws are broken, when buildings are broken into, when the functioning of the university is disrupted, I think then you have a problem. And I think it's much as if, you know, a university is a business. I was saying this to Earl earlier, that it's a business much the way Northwestern Mutual is an insurance business. The business of the university is educating the people around it, but also to promote conversation, debate. I mean, that's part of its business as well. But I think a university does need to protect itself and its capacity to carry out its business, meaning the education of all the students there. And so that's when push comes to shove and we get a problem with respect to civil disobedience and the need to make sure that the civil disobedience doesn't disrupt the capacity of the business of the school to continue.
So from the perspective of the students, Sandy, I don't believe that the students are looking at this from the perspective of the university is a business and we're disrupting the business. The students are concerned about the injustice that is taking place in Gaza and that 34,000 lives on the side of the Palestinians have been lost and counting, and the fact that the starvation that is taking place there. And the students aren't looking at it from the perspective of a business. They're looking at it from the perspective of a moral imperative that says these people, innocent people, are dying. And so who had nothing to do with any of the things that transpired, and yet they're being slaughtered. And the United States government has kind of, you know, afforded or assisted in what is taking place because we give munitions.
I think demonstrations are symbolic speech, and it's an important process in America to allow symbolic speech and to try and do this. But, you know, if this symbolic speech closed down an airport, that wouldn't be allowed. Okay, the airport's an important process and a business that must continue. If it was closing down a freeway, ultimately it wouldn't be allowed. So, I mean, I think that we have to protect symbolic speech. We also have to protect the capacity of businesses to proceed. Some of these, you know, these protesters are arguing that what they want is divestment of investments that relate at all to Israel by the organizations that they're petitioning through their protest, you know, in some places like Northwestern and others have negotiated around that and said, yeah, their board of governors is going to take that issue up, and the students have disbanded. But And I would say that divestment is something that was used a great deal in the apartheid protests, the South African injustices that the world watched and decided ultimately to dismantle through a process that was basically carried by divestment and by economic isolation. So, I mean, there's obviously purpose behind this. I'm just saying that it's a three-way discussion, and we can support protest, but we also have to recognize the limitations that might have to be imposed upon where and how protest occurs.
So at the root of it, Sandy, is the students are saying, if we don't do this, this is not stopping, and what is taking place has not stopped. And so they started protesting because that was not stopping. And so what option did they have to try to bring that to an end? And so the only option that they had was to protest.
Well, yes, absolutely. Symbolic speech, protest. I'm just saying they had options other than breaking into Hamilton Hall and shutting down the operation of the school. I mean, you know, that's another step. And if they do that, if you carry out that kind of civil disobedience, you can expect an outcome. I think frequently that sort of strategic civil disobedience is aimed at achieving the outcome, which is a clash with authorities that grabs more attention. I would simply say it's not a good strategy. I don't think Martin Luther King thought that was a good strategy, nor did Mahatma Gandhi in terms of the way that protests are carried out. But, they felt that civil disobedience itself, and to the extent that it was unjustly received and unjustly treated by the police, that then the message would be received. And the message was received in, for instance, Selma, as the world watched very peaceful people being handled not very peacefully.
So here's what I would say, Sandy, is the majority, only a small handful, it only took what I saw with the person who broke into that building. There was one guy breaking the window in order to get into the building and open the door. To blame and talk as if the entire group of people that were protesting
exactly
were the ones were all doing that is missing the point.
Right, and it wasn't.
But that's the part they're focused on.
Yes, and that was why Martin Luther King was so smart, because he understood that you don't want to hand the gun, the weapon, to the opposition by doing something that's violent or unlawful, because it gives a license to the other side to describe what's happening as a riot.
So before we go back to the phone lines, so then how are the people who are protesting rightfully supposed to handle one or two people who do something outlandish, and yet all of them get blamed, and people say, see, they're this is a riot and they're doing that to, and then they totally dismiss the whole purpose of why those people have gathered.
Absolutely. That's why, you know, I think it requires discipline. One of the problems with protesting is that it does absolutely require discipline. And the problem with maintaining discipline can frequently be interlopers, people who aren't committed to the discipline that is being carried out, will do things that will discredit the effort. And that's what I'm sorry to see. And I think that Joe Biden's doing the right thing by, number one, honoring the protesters, and number two, discrediting those who would protest improperly.
All right, let's go to the phone line. Susan, thank you very much for holding. Susan from Kenosha, your thoughts.
I thoroughly agree with you. But one thing I have to say is that the people that are causing the damage probably are not students and are sent there by a political party or some sort of agitation group to cause that damage. And what we saw when I was working in Milwaukee was that when we had protests, we had people who were coming in, not from the city of Milwaukee, not even from the state of Wisconsin, bringing in people to do damage. And since Milwaukee has so many, and people aren't aware of this, cameras, we could focus in on such activity. At one point, we noticed this truck coming in to the north side, which is predominantly a black neighborhood, white man coming in with a load of bricks and left it on the street so that kids, white kids wearing black hoodies on black bicycles took those bricks and were throwing them and doing damage.
So Susan, hold the thought for a second, because just so people understand who you are and what you did, you worked for Milwaukee. You were working for the Milwaukee Police Department at that time.
I was working for the Milwaukee Police Department in communications.
All right, go ahead.
And I was the supervisor at the time.
All right, so go ahead.
And so I knew where all the cameras were set up, okay? And we would watch this. And we could send our police officers to the particular places to stop this criminal activity, because basically it's criminal activity. And this is not the protesters, the basic protesters who are doing that damage, but these are outside groups.
Hey,
these
Susan.
Are not people.
Hey, Susan, thank you very much for the call. 844-967-2789 is the number. We're going to continue this conversation. You can join us. Clearly, it's a conversation that needs to be had. It's Friday. It means Friday. This is my co-host, Sandy Williams. Again, 844-967-2789.
Crosby, Stills, and
Crosby,
Nash.
Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. You know, the lyrics to the music in those days and times.
I mean, it was message filled. It was,
yeah.
It was like a newspaper in
oh, yeah.
terms of carrying the news. This came out within days of the Kent State issue.
Yeah. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. It's Friday. It means Friday is my co-host, Sandy Williams. And Sandy, you're playing this music because of what?
Well, I'm harking back to the days of the student protesting in the 60s and 70s when we were young. And,
right.
and when I was actually right there. And how much of society, and particularly reflected in its music, was fixated on it and involved with it.
Yeah. Let's go to Bill from O'Connor Walk. Hey, good morning to you, Bill. Thank you very much for the call. Your thoughts?
Boy, these protests, I'm excited about them, and I'm happy for them. And I'll tell you why. I can't believe how some people look at this as a big issue. Kids camping out on campus, of all the things I got to worry about, that's at the bottom of the list. There's one university, I believe it was Utah, but I could be wrong. I could be very wrong. That is having a protest, but they're inviting a sit-down debate in the name of peace, and they've got some agreements going already. Now, that's what debate does. That's what protest does. This is not a riot. Riot was when we had it at the Capitol. That was a riot. That was an insurrection. This is not. These are kids that are very intelligent that are asking why. And if the colleges are the basis, which they are, for honest debate and peaceful debate, we'll get things accomplished. But thank you two guys. I think you get so much accomplished in Wisconsin educating
people. Hey Bill, thank you.
Have a great week.
Thank you very much for the call. 844-967-2789. Let's go to Tom from L.A. Good morning to you, Tom.
Good morning. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. Second, there is a difference between peaceful protest and anarchy. And unfortunately, I do believe that there's instigators that have come into these college campuses. What's really, really sad is that our media, corporate media, does not distinguish the fact of a couple of rotten apples that spoil the whole bunch versus putting everybody in the same barrel of apples. It's astounding to me that unless there is some type of anarchy going on, that that's the only thing that actually covers the mainstream media. If this was a completely peaceful protest, they probably wouldn't even have cameras there. And that's what's really, really disgusting. I'm happy that the protests are happening, but I'd like to see them maybe protesting just the military industrial complex in general, or student loan relief, you know, something that will actually help these people. Because the thing is, you know, here's the sad thing about it. Palestinians and Israelis have been living side by side for many, many years. You have many, many Palestinians that actually work in Israel and have done very, very well. I'm sorry, this comes back to dictatorships. This comes back to authoritarians. Benjamin Netanyahu and Hamas are the problem. And Benjamin Netanyahu is someone that's an authoritarian dictator, just like Erdogan, just like Putin, and they would love for their little gang of many to become a Trumper. They would love Trump to win. Netanyahu would love for Trump to win because of the fact that he would love to have another authoritarian dictator. That's where we the people come in. And yes, we do have to protest peacefully, even if it means that we get ourselves hurt by other people. But I think it's very, very curious that when you got the same people at these college campuses, and they're doing the same kind of cries that they did on January 6th, where they're going, USA, USA. I'm sorry, I don't buy it that those people are the students, and I don't buy the fact that that's there. And I think what needs to happen is exactly what is happening in most of the universities, which is, okay, we got your attention. Now let's have a debate. Now let's have something so we can actually find a peaceful resolution to things. But you don't go and do activities of non-peace when you want peace, just like Martin Luther King Jr. said. That's why it won in 64, and we got the Voting Rights Act. If we would have had a bunch of people that were fighting in favor of voting rights or in civil rights, and they would have been like cracking people over the head and breaking into things, you would have never won the hearts of the American people.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. 844-967-2789 is the number. So, Sandy, this conversation from people on the Democratic side of things that they need to stop these protests because they're going to turn people against Joe Biden and the Democrats may lose the election because they're going to turn these people over to Donald Trump. I don't buy that, even though I'm hearing Democrats say they need to end these protests because they're running the risk that Biden loses the election. But those people don't give a rip about whether or not Joe Biden wins the election. They're trying to send a message to Joe Biden and others that, hey, America, we are up to our eyeballs in this, and we want you to do something about it. Your thoughts?
Well, I think that American foreign policy has been tipped sideways for a very long time, and it's been, could have been the subject of protests on many occasions over the past while. And I think the fact that it's the occasion of a protest now is welcome. I think that it's important that the American people be very actively interested in positions we're taking in the world that impact not only us, but millions of other people. So I join those who are happy to see protesting. I don't think it's a threat, so long as people understand that it's not to be lumped all into a single barrel.
All right, 844-967-2789 is the number. Sandy and I are going to continue this conversation on the other side. We trust that you join in with us. It is a discussion that is not going to go away. Friday on the Earl Ingram Show with Sandy Williams and you.